Welcome to The Generative Age,
a podcast that explores the rapidly evolving world of generative AI and its impact on education.
Guided by EdTech director, author, and NYSCape board member, Lana Winnick, we are joined by experts and practitioners in the field who are shaping this course of artificial intelligence in the classroom.
Whether you're an educator, administrator, technology leader, or simply interested in the future of education, join us on this journey through The Generative Age, powered by NYSCape. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Generative Age. May 13th marks the Day of AI, and Amanda Fox is putting on the Week of AI with a week full of exciting free sessions to help get you and your teachers up to speed on all things AI. I will be presenting two times during that week, May 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you will hear the voices of our future. Students from ages 8 to 18 talk about why they believe AI helps them as learners and why we need to integrate this into our classroom. They speak very eloquently and they have a lot to say, so please check that one out. And I'm also doing one on Thursday, which is a leadership panel, and you may see some familiar names on that panel because we're joined by some of my previous guests. And you can sign up for that free PD on weekofai.ai. So please make sure you go and check that out. Another exciting thing is I just launched a new website. So make sure you go to alanawinnick.com to check out my new website, which now contains a blog. So make sure you subscribe to my mailing list to be the first to know. I'm also working on a very exciting project, but I'm not ready to share that yet. So when I'm ready to share that, I will have a special episode dedicated for that. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. I haven't given you some field updates in quite some time, so let's start off there. OpenAI's ChatGPT no longer requires a login. So this is very exciting for schools and districts and states that have very strict data privacy and security laws. Now that you could use ChatGPT with no login. But please keep in mind that they do use your data to train the model. So you really need to make sure that you teach your students and teachers to not to put in any personally identifiable information. Another field update is Anthropic's model called Claude just released their iOS app. They don't have an Android app just yet, but it is on the way. This software is only for people aged 18 and up. So unless your students are over 18, you will not be allowed to use it with them. This model has a much more natural writing style. And another thing that I really love about it is that you can upload documents and videos and it can analyze those for you. So not a lot of other models have those features built in yet. So that's just something exciting that you can use for free. Meta, which has been a little bit behind in the game of AI, just released AI built into their platform. So you may see an AI chatbot built right into tools like Instagram and Facebook. In other news, there has been accusations of OpenAI and Google being accused of using YouTube transcripts to train their models. So first, OpenAI was accused of using Google's transcripts. And then since Google owns YouTube, they were like, hey, why are we going to let them get ahead here? We want to use it too. So what they did is they changed their user agreements because that was against the terms of service, and they updated the user agreements, didn't notify users, and then apparently they used their own YouTube transcripts to train the models. What I do want to point out for you here is that we really need to be mindful that we have no idea where this information is coming from, right? Like when we use an AI chatbot, where are the sources coming from? One model that does let you check where the sources it's being pulled from is Perplexity. So that's a tool that I really love because you could check the sources and unselect the ones that you do not find reliable, and it will regenerate your content based on the resources that you selected or unselected. And speaking of Perplexity, they do have a new Perplexity for Educators resource. So I'll link that for you there as well. And Google as well did just create an AI course. So I will link those resources for you as well. And these are all interchangeable. Whether you use Google, Perplexity, Copilot, and any of these models, all the skills that you learn can be used within each model. And speaking of looking for misinformation, I just wanted to tell you about a new resource that I'm working on. So when I use AI with my teachers and students, I tell them that they have two jobs as an AI user. Their first job is to be a detective and look for AI bias and misinformation. And their second job is to remix the content to make it sound authentically like them and use their own voice, their own thoughts, and their own ideas. So AI is a great place to start, just like we used to say with Wikipedia, you don't know what you don't know. So AI is a great place to start. It gives us enough information and we need to back it up with reliable information. I am working on this new Be an AI DJ and I have this whole acronym for the word remix and it's my new set of classroom rules. So if you subscribe to my mailing list and follow me on social media, you'll be the first to know when I release this. I'm going to release it this week for the week of AI. So please check that out because I think for me, it helps clarify for students what tools they should use and when it's appropriate to use AI. So I highly encourage you to check out that resource. Okay, now on to the main event. I'm very excited about this episode. I can't wait for what I'm about to share. Another exciting announcement in my life is that I just won a regional award for Outstanding Innovative Leader. And someone who won the Outstanding Innovative Teacher Award is one of the teachers in my school district. That was really exciting for us to be able to share that night with each other and our district and our superintendent. So Marina is someone who really gets to know each child and really does a phenomenal job of tailoring curriculum instruction to her students' unique abilities and interests. And I think that's what makes Marina so special. And that's what makes the work that we do in her classroom and that I share with you so special. So Marina, congratulations. And thank you for being such a welcoming educator and always having your door open to my crazy ideas.
I love your crazy ideas. They keep me alive too, just so you know. I have a lot of fun with these crazy ideas. So I am really happy that you're at Pecanico and your award is very much well deserved as well, because you've brought a lot of innovation into our space and that needs to be applauded for our students. So thank you.
And thank you. See, you need a teacher like this or a colleague like this to keep you going. Not that our other colleagues are not wonderful, they are, but when you want to try some crazy things, to have someone that opens their door to you to try anything is really great. And I think the lesson that everyone can take away from this is that you don't have to know everything to try something with your students. You can and should be learning alongside your students, which is an ISTE standard. So I think Marina really embodies that as well. Marina, why don't you introduce yourself?
This is really hard, Alana.
I know. That's what I was telling you. Marina, who are you?
Who am I? I'm Marina, and I'm a third grade general education teacher at Pecanico Hills with Alana. I am an ISTE certified educator and a Microsoft Innovative Educator expert. I spend all day with 8 and 9 year olds. I've been teaching for about 17 years, and the past 9, I've been at Pecanico in a couple of different roles. I taught 5th grade and 6th grade and 3rd grade. I felt that everything that I was doing in respects to technology in 5th grade, I could do with 3rd graders when my students lived up to the expectation that I had. So I've just finished reading this book called The Power of Fun and How to Feel Alive Again. And I think a lot about where fun lives in our lives in the classroom. And I think that the crazy ideas bring fun to the day as well, not just for the kids, but for us too.
Remember I mentioned before that I have a student panel coming up for the week of AI? Well, the students on my panel are actually Marina's 8 and 9 year old students. And as much as I push into her classroom and work with her, she's really the one that's working with them every day on this. And I would not be able to have students up there, sitting up there with me, speaking so eloquently with me about this if it weren't for an educator like Marina, who really, I think, Marina, you embed it into almost everything from you did the food mood with math, images to help you with your writing. I mean, it's embedded into almost everything you do in your class.
Yeah, well, I think one of the big things about me that I try to also impress on the children is experimentation and tinkering. And I don't know it all. And I want to know it all. I know I'll never know it all. But if I don't actually start playing with something, then I'm not going to grow. So anything that I've come across that's given me a little inkling of an idea, I just kind of played around with it and said, what can I do? Can I do anything with this?
You've been using AI with your students. And I mean like full-blown large language models with your students all school year. So later in this episode, I'm going to show everyone a presentation we did on the debugging creativity lesson, which if you're at ISTE, actually the debugging creativity lesson will be there. And also we're going to have an exhibit called Shine Like a Diamond, which is the poetry unit we did for National Poetry Month. So before we get into any of that, I think I just want to take a step back and say, as a teacher who's trying something brand new in your classroom, how did that feel?
They were excited. They were so excited. And actually, some of them actually came in with a little bit of background knowledge. And it was really pretty incredible because when you came into the classroom and we started to talk to the students about a project that we were going to do together, one of the students immediately said, oh, is it AI?
Yeah, I forgot about it.
Yeah. And we were like, what? I remember looking at you and making eye contact and like, can he read our minds? Because that's exactly what we were going to do. And this particular child was a curious person who had spent quite a lot of their own time on code.org and had come across the coding game that we actually ended up introducing to the whole class. So it was really pretty great because we were learning alongside students, and this person also had some experience to add. What I would say is that there was a lot of curiosity and fun and playfulness with what we did in supporting our students building their writing with our generation. And I think one thing that I've realized now that it's been several months is we actually gave our students a reason, an exciting reason, and a desire to revise. And we called it debugging to keep it in alignment with like computer science processes and to kind of find that intersection. But getting kids to revise is really, really challenging. You know, sometimes it's just like, I'm done and that's it. Sometimes it's that they don't know what to add more of, that they don't know what to take out. And sometimes, you know, I think with most things, everybody's like, well, I know what I'm saying here, but they may not realize always what they're leaving out. And I think that this particular activity offered them an opportunity to say, hey, if you have a picture in your mind and you're hoping for the AI to create something that's matching what you want to create, you might be leaving out something. You might be putting in too much. You may need to revise your language. And I think reflecting upon all of this, like, it's really helped me to understand how can I also support students who are revising and don't really know how to do that in any type of writing.
And what would you say to the teachers who think that using AI is cheating and it's not going to help them with their writing? Because let me just tell everyone, you also have a background in literacy. So you have studied reading and writing extensively. So I think a lot of teachers don't want to use AI because they're scared that it's going to take away the students' thinking.
Well, I would want to know why they think that. I would want to know more about their classroom, what they care about, what they want for their students, and listen to anything that they might be grappling with, because the reality is I've been there too. I would, you know, maybe reframe it for them and say, look, there's definitely people that, you know, may cheat because that's just humanity, right? Like, there's that too, but you got to teach into it. It's a tool that's not going away. And I remember when I was teaching middle school, one thing that always devastated me was when I saw kids were copying like paragraphs and things from websites, and I could just easily put their work into Google and it would come back. I mean, you can't do that with AI, right? So there's that scariness of the AI. You always say the AI detectors, they don't work.
Right.
And it would be really unfortunate for a child to grow as a writer and then somebody think that they wrote it with AI, but yet maybe they're using AI and they're using it in a way that they're learning new structures about how to compose. They're uncovering different positionings of phrases that will help them to be clearer. They're building their vocabulary by asking for alternative words to express themselves. I think we need to teach into it, not just for the written composition, but also for the media literacy, critical sources part of it too, because it's not going away. And yeah, I'm a third grade teacher and people might say, whoa, because I think a lot of times I hear about middle school and high school and college. But the thing is, it has to start somewhere. The education has to start somewhere.
And I would arguably say that when we start as young as in your class, then it reframes their thinking around it. I don't think your students will ever think that AI is cheating just because of the way that it was introduced at such a young age.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so either, because even as we've used the Perplexity tool, and even when I'm modeling and I'm trying to do it quickly with Perplexity, they're like, you didn't check your sources.
Yeah.
I have kids that are holding me accountable to really important, not just best practices, but like life practices, because as human beings, especially with all of this around us, I mean, it's nothing brand new because people were Photoshopping images and doctoring up things forever, right?
Right.
But we have to be critical of what we're looking at. And my kids are holding me accountable when I'm showing them in front of it. And I mean, I have kids that are 8 and 9 asking me, is this okay to use? Oh, I saw there were ads on this. I should take it off the list. And just things that, like, even when I was teaching fifth grade, it took me quite a while to get my students there. This has actually been a really easier lift.
That's incredible.
One thing that I think was really interesting too was when the kids were writing scripts, they got to make up their own little plays and they were super creative. And, you know, sometimes I think it can be a point of tension. Like, again, going back to what you're saying about cheating, like, is this going to rob us of our creativity or is this going to enhance us? And they didn't use any artificial intelligence to actually support their writing, but I used it. I actually tried out something where when I was giving them feedback, I would put portions of their plays in and I would say, use this strategy to offer this writer some feedback. And I would copy and paste the feedback, which wasn't that bad. And I would specifically say, this is for an 8-year-old. So please make it, relative to that age developmentally. And what I would do is I would put the comment on the student's page and I put a little robot next to it. And I know we don't want them to think that AI is a robot. We did tackle that one. But that was the closest little emoji that I could think of to kind of mirror it. And then what I would do is I would actually write my own feedback, and put a little heart next to it. I had gotten that idea just from another educator out in New Jersey who very just eloquently, firmly stated one day when we were talking just about the pros and cons of using AI, like, you know, it doesn't have a heart. So, I explained to the kids in that particular day, it wasn't like a full lesson. It was just like, you've got some artificial intelligence suggestions, and then you have some suggestions from me. And, you know, it's not about which one do you like. It's about, like, you know, which one do you prefer to use today? They gave you some information without knowing who you really are. I know who you really are. And my feedback is more connected to you as an individual. Theirs is more connected to who you are, you know, where you're heading with your writing. So keep it all in mind when you're making some decisions.
And what did they prefer?
I think they preferred me too.
That's good. That's good to hear. So Marina, you know that I've been working on this new resource I'm about to put out for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think I developed it really working with you and your students. And we really give them two jobs when they use AI. Their first job is that they're a detective and they have to look out for bias and misinformation. Mm-hmm. And their second job is to be a DJ and remix the content to make it their own. And I turn that into a whole acronym. So if you subscribe to my newsletter, you'll get it there. Or if you follow me on social media, you can find it there probably by the time this is published, hopefully, if not sometime for the week of AI. But when I introduced this to Marina students for the first time ever, we actually had a student in the class. I don't want to ruin the moment for Marina, so I'm going to pass it over to you. Do you want to tell them what happened when I introduced this term of being an AI DJ?
Oh yeah, this was such a phenomenal lesson, not just because it was important to teach around plagiarism. And again, going, you know, circling back to that whole idea of cheating, this lesson resonated so deeply with one of my students. And this particular student was able to be seen by his peers in a completely different way, which, you know, I always want my students to be able to share who they are and all of the facets of who they are. So when we were starting to talk about plagiarism, the idea of DJing came up, really going through your resource. And when you see Alana's creation, you'll see all the different elements of it. But I'm not a DJ and neither is Alana, but we have a student in our classroom who does actually, at 9 years old, have some experience with DJing. And the lesson was really about plagiarism and not just copying and pasting what AI is giving you and using it to actually support your brainstorming, construction of sentences and ideas. So what we did is we got the kid up in the front of the class and he started talking to everybody about what DJing is. And, you know, they were saying how if you have a song that somebody else created, you can remix it. And that's what DJs do. They actually take bits and pieces of other songs and they make it their own. And we asked a lot of confirming questions such as, you know, okay, well, so if you've remixed it now, is it more yours? And they were like, yes. And we were like, if you just took the original, is it yours? And they were very blatant. Nope, that's stealing. That's not okay. And we made the connection with also this with the AI or any type of plagiarism, really, whether, you know, these are kids who are taking state assessments where they have to cite direct evidence from a text. So, you know, learning that, you know, there's always a little of grappling around that too, when they're like, I thought you said I couldn't copy. And then they are getting. So, you know, it really lent itself into, you know, when is that okay? When is that not okay? But for this kid, it was really, I would say, a highlighting moment for them. And actually, in a couple of days, I'm doing this really incredible workshop for educators where each one of my students is sharing a 1 minute snapshot from the year. It's kind of an Ignite style workshop. And this particular kid is going to talk all about DJing and plagiarism. And I think their catch line was original beats, not fake beats. And I love that because they're keeping the metaphor going. And, you know, I think a lot of times we learn and anchor so much through metaphors. So I think the more we can do through that is also going to help resonate with all our learners.
I haven't looked at the slideshow yet, so I didn't know that, but that's so cool. For him to be excited about getting up in front of the room multiple times and teaching his peers and teaching educators and sharing, it was a big deal.
Yeah, well, I think it doesn't really matter if you're using AI or whatever. I think anytime the kids can step in and show their expertise to not just their peers, but to us, like we should let them do that. It's why they're there, you know?
And I think, you know, we were just talking this morning about how when students share their work with an audience outside the four walls of your classroom, how they step up. Like, it wasn't even this particular example. And really strive to create more opportunities for our students where they can have a real authentic assignments that are shared. Like, whether they use AI or they don't, AI can help them get there. But if you're listening and you're trying to AI proof your assignments, that's a great way to do it, right? Use AI to help you learn and apply the knowledge. But, you know, doing an authentic presentation or creating a podcast, which your students do, we're actually going to be featured in We Videos podcast and at their booth because we did the Perseverance Pod in Marina's classroom, where her students are creating their own podcast about perseverance. And they're using the person that they did their biography unit on. And they did use AI to help them with their biographies. So sort of used AI.
Yeah. And I mean, that just goes back to, again, like, this is a podcast and we're listening to podcasts and people are creating in the form of podcasts. Why shouldn't students?
Right. And then Marina's going to actually release an episode every week during the summer to the families to like keep them excited during the summer. So I thought that was a really cute idea. Is there anything else we haven't talked about that you want to share that we've done in your room?
Well, I think Shine Like a Diamond is worth some attention because, you know, at the core of the work that I do and so many educators is the identity of our students and representation and helping them understand more about who they are, helping them to share more of who they are with their peers. And we did a really great cross-curricular project earlier in the year with the art teacher, as well as the library media specialist, and then Alana as well. And we asked our students to do some research on their birthstones. super excited about that because it had the element of science. It was about them. It had them talking about their birthdays and when is your birthday? This is my birthday. This is my birthstone. That's your birthstone. Nobody has this birthstone. So there was just so much joy in talking about something that made them so happy themselves. And it almost got to a place where it probably didn't feel like schoolish, but they were researching their birthstones so they could learn all about how they were made, what they mean, famous ones. And then after that, they started to craft a poem about themselves, starting with a very scaffolded structure and then selecting their five lines from that scaffolded structure that they really liked, that they felt sounded like them, and then positioning them in a format and sequence that they enjoyed hearing when it was read aloud. So what happened after they created these poems was I actually put the poems into an AI and I said, generate a magical enchanting image that matches this poem. And I gave the students all four of the images and they selected one that they preferred and they felt best represent them. And then using that image, they had to create another line or two to add into their poem. So they revised their poem based on the image that they received. And it was really, really amazing to see what was coming out. It felt like, it really did feel like you were stepping into like a fantasy land for some of them.
I really loved that assignment. And it's been hung up on a bulletin board in our hallways.
It's been up for a while though.
It will be traveling with us to ISTE. And if you are at ISTE, it'll be in the ISTE camp. So you should definitely come check that out. We had the students record their poems too, so you can actually hear their voices. And what I loved about that one was that it's very different to get an image to use for your creative writing process or to create a prompt to get an image that you think is reflective of your poem. It's like two very different ways of using AI image generation.
Mm-hmm.
And having students really learn the difference between prompting and the difference of just creating or getting inspiration, right? Because AI could just be like an idea generator, right? For those students that get stuck. You do this all the time with the, I'm going to mess up the name. The Alabreja, what is it?
Alabreja.
Yeah, Alabreja. They were really just using those Alabreja images for inspiration, right? It yep. wasn't necessarily about getting the perfect prompt to get the best image. It was about getting an image. And yes, it was about prompting and language, but it was to use for inspiration for a writing unit, not to use as an image to share with anyone.
Yeah, it was like visual DJing, I guess.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so we've done a lot of really creative things. And just the reciprocity of it all is that we also have a lot of off-screen activities that are very similar. And I was thinking about this as we were talking. You know, anytime I'm having the kids draw or sketch, I do really remind them that when they're doing the drawing and sketching themselves, they're creating an output of their ideas. You know, and that's an extension of their thinking. And there's no artificial intelligence involved. There's their human intelligence. And I think that's really great too, for them to just understand the complexities of what's happening when they're interacting with any type of LLM or with themselves. There's networks, there's connections, there's inputs, there's outputs, big ideas.
Yeah. If you remember from my episode with Holly Clark, I shared with her some bits of a lesson and you heard her very excited reaction. That lesson actually was a lesson that I did with Marina. And so now we're going to hop right into the lesson where Marina and I described the debugging creativity lesson.
In the beginning of the school year, and when I say that I'm talking about September, Alana and I knew that we really wanted to tackle the idea of generative artificial intelligence within the classroom with students. And we really wanted to start with just breaking down some language. So we spent some time with the kids talking about what intelligence is and also deciphering that there's human intelligence and artificial intelligence. And it kind of worked out really perfectly because we work with our guidance counselor who uses a program called Second Step. And the first lesson that she coincidentally did with my third graders was on human intelligence, where the children were able to take a look at this graphic and color-coded brain and look at all the different functions that the brain controls our body for. It all comes together for human intelligence. And it was a really great way to see the neural connections and the networking and to begin to make a connection with artificial intelligence anchored from this early experience.
We began the lesson with Marina's students by introducing them to this code.org activity. It was actually really fun. And the students were training the, I don't really like to call it a robot because it doesn't look like anything. And that was a little bit of a misconception, but they were training this AI robot to distinguish what was garbage and what was fish in the ocean. When we were doing the code.org activity and sorting the fish versus the garbage, we trained the AI poorly so the students can really see that the AI was only as good as the humans that trained it and the data that it was trained on. So we thought that that was really important, tying in that computer science language into the writing.
So I would say that in addition to our focus on artificial intelligence, there were so many components of language development at work. And as Alana mentioned, we really didn't want the students to think that the artificial intelligence was a robot. So we had some conversations around that. And also the cloud. So you're doing a lot of work around important information around the language with using technology. And it was pretty cool. Like we had what we've learned from our learners as we're learning with them is that they actually do know a little something about a lot of these ideas. So when we brought up the cloud, there were a lot of students who might have been thinking literally at first, but one student said, oh, the cloud is like, if you have photographs on your phone and your phone ends up in a pool, you still have your photographs because they're up in the cloud. So it actually lent to us to talk about the infrastructure of our school where some landing areas were and how a lot of their information that they were creating through our systems was stored in a cloud.
And here is where Marina taught them the difference between an input and an output. And she really put it into the, like writing terms, right? Like a writing prompt. We use the word prompt all the time. Here's a writing prompt. So we're using that same computer language in the writing process and an input, which is your sentence, and the output here, which is the image. So tying in all these computer science language into the writing curriculum. And then we did this activity with them, promptguesser.app. There's no E in there. And for us, that was really fun because the students had to come up with what they thought the prompt would be. I'll just give you a little disclaimer. Preview the image first on a second screen and then drag it over. It's not that we found any images that were inappropriate. They just weren't really like age appropriate. So just find ones that resonate with your audience before you pop them up there. And it really helped the students come up with this really descriptive language. Marina, do you want to add on to that?
Yeah, so it was really nice because they were able to work with peers and as a collaborative group to really analyze the image that they were looking at and to be very specific about what was in the background, what was the most important image in the most important object in the image, and what were the colors. So without giving them any direct instruction, we were just taking a lot of the different elements of just their observational noticings.
And here they are writing their prompts. They're super cute. We tied in more of that computer language terminology. So pattern recognition is a computer science word. And we had the students analyze the similarities and really to think about what came out well, what didn't come out so well, why did it come out well, why didn't it come out well, and starting to recognize these patterns on their own. And that is computer science language.
So to really engage the kids and get them to understand that our language has multiple meanings sometimes, and that we really have to be clear and specific about what we're communicating with others, especially with artificial intelligence. We showed them this Twitter post that was going around of salmon in the river. So majestic. And the kids had a blast. They were laughing at this hysterically because clearly this is not the fish swimming in the river. This is salmon that we would cook.
Yeah. So then we started to tie in more computer science language. So algorithms, what is an algorithm? And we came up with quick, simple algorithms like an action word and a descriptive word. So maybe a type of image and an animal, like a picture of a dog. And those were the smaller algorithms. And then we had them to develop much bigger, deeper algorithms, such as the algorithm is create, and it represents colors, resources, environment, action, tell a story, and extras. So it's an acronym, create. And that really helped them come up with a sentence that would give them a great image. Another algorithm that we came up with is a 7-step algorithm. So the students would, I'll just read a few of them and you can look through the rest on your own. Write an action word for the AI, write the type of image that you want, write the name of the most important word in your image, and in front of the most important word, add a color, size, texture, then after the object, add an action, and so on and so forth. And it's probably hard for you if you're just listening, but if you look at the screen and you write through the sentence on your own, you'll really start to see that algorithm and helping them understand what an algorithm is and helping them create algorithms that help them get the best image.
And also the algorithm improves their writing structure too, because we really tried to design the algorithm so that they were mirroring the formatting of grammar of the English language.
And then we noticed that they were using subjective language. So we had tried to help them be a little bit more specific. So one example that we'll show you later is cute. What is cute? Cute is something different for me, and cute might mean something different for you, right? So helping them understand specific language and not specific language. And then helping them understand different words that will help them get the best results. So action words like create, make, generate, produce, and type of image, which might be an illustration, a photograph, sculpture, or a 3D image. That was really helpful because one student wasn't getting the image that she was looking for, and I'll show you a bit what that looks like in a bit. But by changing just one word, she was able to get closer to what she was looking for.
As Alana mentioned, one of the key elements of this work with our students was to find the intersection between writing, computer science, and artificial intelligence. And as in most elementary classrooms, read aloud is a core part of the day. And during this time, I made a point to read this beautiful biography on Grace Hopper, Queen of Computer Code. And what was really exciting about this book was not just to learn about the life of a really amazing woman who broke some barriers, she also coined the term debugging, because the children and I discovered that debugging literally comes from the fact that a machine was not working properly. And when Grace and her team took it apart, they actually discovered a moth inside of it. So I thought that was really great, because a lot of this project really stems around language and being very specific and being discreet. So we have this term debugging, which is it was literal in this case, but now it's more figurative as a way to unpack something that may not be working right, and to uncover, you know, what part of the system needs a little bit more attention in order for it all to function together.
And then we had students debug their prompts. So they asked themselves these questions that we gave them to help them understand maybe why their prompts weren't giving them the images that they were hoping for. So asking themselves, why isn't AI creating it the way I wanted? Did I tell it the type of image I wanted? Did I use specific descriptive words? And then we gave them these writing prompts to help them sit and help a friend through it, right? So working through a peer and giving them dialogue to ask one another, like, this is not what I was picturing. Can you help? And the student can ask each other these questions. Did you write the type of image? Did you follow in algorithms? Are you using words that have more than one meaning? And to help them open up these conversations to help develop their writing into something like so much stronger. We've included some examples for you that I think do a really great job. And there's some reflections of the students' work on how they felt after writing the prompt, if they were happy with their prompt, if they weren't happy with their prompt. And there's a few that really stood out to me. So there's this one where this student was talking about a real, remember we talked about that before, that subjective language, a real cute kitten wearing ballet shoes. And she was expecting a real picture of a kitten, not a cartoon image of a kitten. So by substituting one word and saying, generate a photograph of a cute kitten, we were able to get a image that was much closer to what she was looking for. And I'm telling you, this student was nearly in tears and she was not happy with her images. And by pulling her aside, changing one word, the smile on her face was so incredible. And then I'll let you talk about this one. This one was like your favorite one.
Oh, this is always my favorite one to talk about because my student that wrote the prompt that generated the first row of four is a huge snake fan. And the prompt that they wrote was a big black timber rattlesnake in striking position on a rock in the forest, attacking a rat with a shirt that says food. And what came out was what I tell everybody, a Greek mythological beast. And when the student opened up their PowerPoint to see these images, their eyes bugged out. I think they were even surprised what emerged. And this was a really great because as I worked with this student, and you could see how Alana and I took the students through this as an iterative practice. So prompt one became prompt two and ended up as prompt three. And each time we worked with students based on what we were noticing, whole class as well as individually. So for this particular student, I really spent some time talking to them about what's more important here. What's the most important object, or in this case, creature? Is it the snake or the mouse? And we began to write more from the perspective of the snake and where the snake was located. And then after that, what was the snake doing? And then what was in the background? And the student was pleased with the second round, or the third round, I should say, of images that were generated because they were more in alignment with what they were hoping for. And also, I would say that we did some really great work on some of the syntax around language.
There were so many other examples of AI and computer science that came up throughout this process. So what we really like to do is leverage the students. And when one figures something out or we teach one student something, we have them teach each other. And it's really actually such a beautiful thing because sometimes the students that are not necessarily great at other subjects excel in technology, and it really gives them a voice and makes them shine and makes them feel really great about something that they're really good at. So we try to empower our students to be leaders and empower them to teach each other. And in this instance, we taught them how to use spell check. And this was really important with prompting because when they were not spelling words the correct way, they were not getting the images that they were hoping for. And by using spell check and changing it to the correct spelling, they were able to get an image that was a lot closer to what they were looking for. And I've included an image of a student that's really helping the other one learn how to use spell check. And then another example of using AI is a student using dictation. So one of our students has trouble typing, and we taught her that she can use speech to text to help her write her sentences. She can speak very, very eloquently, but she just has trouble writing and typing. And with something like this, it was just easier for her to get her words out. And we made sure that we explained to our students that there are times when we need to do more traditional writing to learn those foundational skills. And there are other times when dictation is okay. And as an adult, I used dictation to really write the first draft of my book. I have a lot of thoughts when I'm driving or walking, and it was a lot easier for me as an adult to dictate my own thoughts onto paper that way. So I really feel like we should be giving every child every tool available and teaching them how to use it the right way. So I don't want to ever hold anyone back from really excelling, because really at our core, our job as educators is to prepare students for their future, to be successful in their future. And whatever tools we can give them to be successful, I think it's really important.
So getting back to the iterative process of all of this, like each time the students got their art back, we had them go through a reflective process where they could really look back at what they wrote and ask themselves what might have happened, what might they need to change, why do they think the AI produced what it produced. And there were some really big takeaways from this work, I think, for all of these young writers, that sometimes it was that they were using words that were subjective. Sometimes it was that their sentences were run on. Sometimes it was that they were not using precise words. So that was really great because after reflecting, they were a little bit more eager and apt to go back in and make changes.
Some other examples that I use this with was like, let's say a foreign language, it doesn't just have to be English. So the students were learning how to write in French and they were describing characteristics of a face. And in their writing, we realized if they weren't, this is a whole conversation on bias that came up, unless they specifically rated the skin color, it was, they were just like literally all white. And that does not reflect the population of our students. We have a very diverse population. So that sparked a larger conversation. I actually had Ken Shelton on my podcast to dissect AI bias and discrimination. I think it's incredibly important and I don't think it should be an isolated thing. And yes, I did teach my students about that in an isolated way, but I do think it's important as it comes up for us to just address it in that moment so the students know that they have to really be detectives of their AI generated content to make sure that they're getting the best results. So now for the reason we're here, the most important thing is to discuss the writing implications that came out of this, all the successful things that happened to the students' writing, because they actually became significantly stronger writers from this.
As a teacher who's also supporting my students developing in their writing, their critical thinking, and their reflection skills, I felt that this project really was impactful because it supported my students in making decisions about how they wanted to compose their prompts, which transfers over into anything that they're writing. They had to analyze the prompts to determine where their writing wasn't clear. And this is a skill that I certainly want them to use as they continue to write, whether it's for prompt-based writing for artificial art generation or for a narrative piece, an informational piece, or anything that they have to compose. And finally, it also really gave them the opportunity to do some problem solving around language about how they could be more precise so that the results were closer to the expectations. For me, for my own future planning, since all of this work was done at the beginning of the school year, this was almost like a baseline for me. I could see immediately the work that I needed to do with my students. Yes, I will keep in mind that there's some digital fluency elements involved, such as the typing, but I did see that my students would need some work around sentence structure, that I wanted to decrease the amount of run-on sentences. And in order to do that, I would have to spend time this year working on, well, what does make a complete sentence? And how do you write complex sentences? I wanted to help bump up their vocabulary and introduce them to more descriptive language and how to use adjectives in a way that's going to help them make their work more descriptive and also help them to decrease the amount of overused language and, you know, understand that there's more options out there for them to use when they're communicating messages and ideas.
And we asked the students if they enjoyed the project, and oh boy, they enjoyed the project. We put a little clip in here, and they were doing a video for a school in Kenya, and they were telling them all about their day at school and what they do. And if we play this for you, all of them just kept saying, technology workshop, technology workshop, technology workshop. So it's something that they were telling the students in Africa, and it really just helped us understand that they really do love it because they were talking pretty passionately about it.
So what's next? So what we discovered as some of the kids were reflecting, and definitely the student who you see on the screen, these children are ready to write stories from their images. So our next step is to think about how can we use these images that they're generating from their prompts and now build them out into stories.
And Marina does a really great TED Talk unit with her students. And so this really lends itself to that because they're going to start to really have to use descriptive language to bring out the audience's emotions. And this one student started telling a really funny story about his image. We never asked them to do that.
No.
And he just started going off and explaining it and making up this really silly story. And we really like to create authentic learning opportunities for our students and know that their work is being seen at a larger, you know, hopefully global audience. And it helps them feel like their work, they put a lot more time into their work because they know it's being seen. And it makes them feel like someone cares, right? Like, and I think as educators, that's what we need to help to make sure that our students, or as a leader, to help sure that my teachers, Marina is my teacher, that her work matters and all the amazing things that she does in her classroom should be celebrated, right? And I think for us, like, yes, this was a writing assignment. We tied in so much computer science. And I think that, you know, sometimes computer science could be its own separate class, like a STEM teacher. And I think we really did a beautiful job integrating it into the writing in a way that made writing fun for students. And I think a lot of students don't like writing, and I was one of them. And this would have been really fun for me. And I think that the kids didn't even realize all of the incredible skills that they were building while they were really just writing prompts to create AI image generation. So I think that people have a misconception about how AI is going to make us weaker writers. And really the reality behind it is that if we use AI the right way, it actually makes us much stronger writers. So if you're at ISTE, you can look up Marina and I and come see the lessons live in action. And thank you so much for being on the show, Marina.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. This was really fun.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Generative Age, powered by Nicescape. For a deeper dive, check out my new book titled, How'd You Guess? The Generative Age, now available on Amazon.
Our journey may pause here, but the conversation doesn't need to end.
Stay connected and informed by following me on social media at Alana Winnick and subscribing to my newsletter, all conveniently accessible on my website, alanawinnick.com.
Don't just listen, be a part of it. With your free Nicescape membership, you can join these live discussions, enroll in our free Generative Age Nicescape community, where you can share resources, ask questions, and collaborate with like-minded colleagues. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider leaving a review and telling a colleague or a friend.
We've got so much more in store, so be sure to join us next time for another exciting conversation. Until then, keep learning and keep growing in the generative age.